Question Directions, Part B. In Part B of the listening section, you will hear several longer conversations and talks. Each conversation or talk is followed by several questions. The conversations, talks, and questions will not be repeated. The conversations and talks are about a variety of topics. You do not need special knowledge of the topics to answer the questions correctly. Rather, you should answer each question on the basis of what is stated or implied by the speakers in the conversations or talks. For most of the questions, you will need to click on the best of four possible answers. Some questions will have special directions. The special directions will appear in a box on the computer screen. Listen to part of a conversation between two students on campus.
Where have you been? I've missed you in lab.
I've been sick.
Nothing serious, I hope.
Well, I stayed out of the hospital, but to tell the truth, I was in pretty bad shape. Some kind of flu.
That's too bad. Are you better now?
Well enough to start thinking about school again. Now I'm worried about getting caught up.
Let's see, how many labs have you missed?
Margaret, I got sick 3 weeks ago, so I am really behind.
Let me look at my notebook. I've got it right here.
Oh, great. I was hoping you'd let me make a copy of your notes.
Sure, you can do that, Gary. And I have some good news for you. You haven't missed any quizzes. We haven't had any since you've been gone. Listen, after you have a chance to look at my notes, why don't we get together? If there's anything you don't understand, maybe I can explain it to you. It's hard trying to read someone else's notes.
That would be perfect. I hate to bother you, though.
No bother. I'm sure you'd do it for me.
18. What is Gary's problem? What does Gary want Margaret to do? 20. What does Margaret offer to do? 21. What is Margaret's attitude in this conversation? 22. Listen to part of a lecture in an American literature class. The professor is talking about American novelists in the 20th century. He is focusing on F. Scott Fitzgerald. There have been a number of important American novelists in this century, but I have chosen F. Scott Fitzgerald for our class because he is one of the more interesting ones. Born in 1896 and educated at Princeton, he wrote novels that describe the post-war American society, very much caught up in the rhythms of jazz. In 1920, the same year that he published his first book, This Side of Paradise, he married Zelda Sayre, also a writer. His most famous book, The Great Gatsby, appeared in 1925. Fitzgerald had a great natural talent, but unfortunately he became a compulsive drinker. A brilliant success in his youth, he never made the adjustments necessary to a maturing writer in a changing world. His later novels, All the Sad Young Men, Tender is the Night, and The Last Tycoon, were less successful, so that when he died in 1940, his books were out of print, and he had been almost forgotten. His reputation now is far greater than it was in his lifetime, especially since the film version of his novel, The Great Gatsby, was released. Now, with that introduction, I am going to run the video version of The Great Gatsby, and then we'll divide up into groups to talk about it. 22. What is the main topic of this lecture? 23. Why wasn't Fitzgerald more successful in his later life? According to the lecturer, what do we know about the novels written by F. Scott Fitzgerald? What does the professor want the class to do after the lecture? 25. The university quartet has been invited to play for a music appreciation class. Listen to a talk by the director of the quartet.
Before the concert begins, let me tell you a little bit about chamber music. From medieval times through the 18th century, musicians in Europe had two options for employment: the church or the nobility. So when they were not performing at religious functions, they were playing in the chambers of stately homes. And they came to be known as chamber players. Chamber music is written to be performed by a small group, more than one, but fewer than a dozen musicians. Pieces for more than eight players are unusual, though, and it is rare to see a conductor. It may surprise you to know that any combination of instruments can be used for chamber music. The most popular are the piano, strings, and woodwinds, but chamber music has been written for other instruments as well. Early chamber music, let's say the 16th and 17th centuries, was often written for the recorder, harpsichord, and viola. During the Elizabethan period, there were many talented composers of chamber music, including William Byrd and Orlando Gibbons. And at that time, vocal chamber music, called madrigal singing, was very popular. Later, both Johann Sebastian Bach and George Friedrich Händel wrote trio sonatas for chamber groups. This evening, the University Quartet will perform two of the later pieces by Bach. Ladies and gentlemen, the University Quartet.
26. What is the main purpose of the talk? 27. What is the origin of the term chamber music? 28. According to the speaker, which instruments are the most popular for chamber music? 29. Why does the speaker mention Johann Sebastian Bach? 30. What will the listeners hear next? 31. Listen to part of a conversation between a student and a secretary in the chemical engineering department.
May I help you?
Yes. My name is Bob Stevens, and I have an appointment with Dr. Benjamin at 3 o'clock on Wednesday.
3 o'clock on Wednesday? Yes, I see it here on his calendar.
Well, I was wondering whether he has an earlier appointment available on the same day.
I'm sorry, Mr. Stevens, but Dr. Benjamin is tied up in a meeting until noon, and he has two appointments scheduled before yours when he gets back from lunch.
Oh.
There is a later appointment time open, though, at 4:30, if that would help you. Or you could see him Thursday morning at 10.
No, thank you. I think I'll just rearrange my own schedule so I can keep my regular appointment.
31. Why did the man go to the chemical engineering department? What does the woman say about Dr. Benjamin? 33. What did the secretary offer to do? 34. What did the man decide to do? 35. Listen to part of a lecture in a health class. The professor will be talking about nutrition. She will focus on health food.
Health food is a general term applied to all kinds of foods that are considered more healthful than the types of foods widely sold in supermarkets. For example, whole grains, dried beans, and corn oil are health foods. A narrower classification of health food is natural food. This term is used to distinguish between types of the same food. Fresh fruit is a natural food, but canned fruit with sugars and other additives is not. The most precise term of all and the narrowest classification within health foods is organic food, used to describe food that has been grown on a particular kind of farm. Fruits and vegetables that are grown in gardens treated only with organic fertilizers, that are not sprayed with poisonous insecticides, and that are not refined after harvest are organic foods. In choosing the type of food you eat, then, you have basically two choices, inorganic processed foods or organic unprocessed foods. A wise decision should include investigation of the allegations that processed foods contain chemicals, some of which are proven to be toxic, and that vitamin content is greatly reduced in processed foods.
35. What is the main topic of this lecture? 36. Which term is used to identify foods that have not been processed or canned? 37. What happens to food when it is processed? 38. Which word best describes the speaker's attitude toward health foods? 36. Listen to part of a class discussion in an anthropology class. The professor is talking about the Stone Age.
So, as you will recall, the Stone Age is the time early in the development of human cultures, before the introduction of metals, when prehistoric people started to make stone tools and weapons. Can anyone remember the exact dates for the Stone Age? Chuck?
Well, you said that the exact dates would vary for different parts of the world.
That's exactly right, I did. But in general, the use of flint for tools was widespread about 2 million years ago. That was the beginning of the Paleolithic period, which is also referred to as the Old Stone Age. What can you tell me about the humanoid creatures that were alive during this period? Yes, Beverly?
They were Neanderthals, and they were nomads, and they survived by hunting and gathering.
Very good. Beverly, can you tell us anything about the tools that they made?
Yes. They were primarily general-purpose tools, such as axes, knives, and arrowheads that they used for hunting.
Correct. But we have also found some interesting tools for specific domestic purposes as well. Bone implements were being introduced in the Old Stone Age, and we have reason to believe that they were actually making sewing needles. Any ideas on why that might be so? Chuck?
The Ice Age. They must have been cold.
That's true. The last Ice Age was about 13,000 BC, which is at the end of the Paleolithic period. Do you remember anything else about that time that is of particular importance? Beverly?
Neanderthal man began to decline, and Homo sapiens emerged.
Right. This marks the end of the Old Stone Age and the beginning of the Middle Stone Age, or the Mesolithic period. In fact, meso means middle. Now let's think about the changing climate and the emergence of Homo sapiens. How would this influence the kind of tools that would be produced? Any ideas, Chuck?
Well, with the more moderate climate, Homo sapiens didn't have to wander so far to hunt and gather. Wasn't it in the Middle Stone Age that agricultural villages started to develop?
Actually, it was during the Neolithic period, or the Late Stone Age, about 8,000 BC. But you are on the right track. Some of the tools previously used for hunting were adapted for rudimentary farming even during the Middle Stone Age, before farming communities started to develop.
So was it farming that marked the end of the Stone Age then?
It was influential, but the introduction of metals was usually considered the defining event that brought an end to the Stone Age. As metals started to challenge stone as the material of choice for tools, mankind entered a new era.
39. How did the professor define the Stone Age? According to the lecturer, which two occupations describe the Neanderthals? Name the three time periods associated with the Stone Age. 42. Why did tools change during the Late Stone Age? 43. What marked the end of the Stone Age? 43. Listen to part of a lecture in a geology class. The professor is talking about oil deposits.
Most crude oil is found in underground formations called traps. In a trap, the oil collects in porous rocks, along with gas and water. Over time, the oil moves up toward the surface of the earth through cracks and holes in the porous rock, until it reaches a non-porous rock deposit that will not allow it to continue moving. The oil becomes trapped under the non-porous rock deposit. There are several different types of traps, but today we will talk about the three most common ones: the anticline trap, the salt dome trap, and the fault trap. Look at this diagram. Here is an example of an anticline. As you can see, the oil is trapped under a formation of rock that resembles an arch. In this anticline, the petroleum is trapped under a formation of non-porous rock with a gas deposit directly over it. This is fairly typical of an anticline. Now, let's look at a diagram of a salt dome. This salt dome shows how a cylinder-shaped salt deposit has pushed up through a layer of sedimentary rocks, causing them to arch and fracture.
The oil deposits have collected along the sides of the salt dome. Finally, I want to show you a fault trap. This diagram represents a fracture in the earth that has shifted a non-porous rock formation on top of a porous formation. Remember, as in all traps, the oil is collected in the porous rock and trapped underground by the non-porous rock. Geologists study the terrain for indications of possible oil traps. For example, a bulge in a flat surface may signal the presence of a salt dome. 44. What is a trap? Select the diagram of the anticline trap that was described in the lecture. 46. Identify the non-porous rock in the diagram. 47. According to the speaker, how can geologists locate salt domes? 48. Listen to part of a conversation between two students on campus.
Who is teaching the class?
Actually, I have a choice between Dr. Perkins and Dr. Robinson. Do you know anything about them?
Sure, I've taken classes with both of them.
So what do you think?
They are both good in their own way, but it depends on how you learn best, because they approach the class from two entirely different points of view.
I've heard that Robinson is very strict.
You could say that. I'd call it traditional. He lectures every day, gives quizzes every week, leading up to a comprehensive final exam, multiple choice, as I recall.
How about Perkins?
More relaxed. Uses group discussion and projects instead of quizzes. And I'm pretty sure his final is short essay.
Which one would you advise me to take?
I really can't say. If you like to listen to lectures and take notes, and if you do well on objective tests, I'd say Robinson. But if you enjoy working in groups and you do better on essay exams, then I'd recommend Perkins.
Thanks, that was helpful. I think I'll sign up for Robinson's class.
48. What is the woman's problem? 49. What do Dr. Perkins and Dr. Robinson have in common? 50. Why did the woman decide to take the class with Dr. Robinson?